Okay, so hopefully everyone's where they want to be. I'm going to speak for maybe 25 minutes and tell you everything you need to know. So by the time we've finished, you'll have the essential information. You know, some of you may know this Buddhist kind of joke, which is, you know, Zen Buddhism is essential Buddhism. And Tibetan Buddhism is complete Buddhism. So tonight we're going to just touch on what's, from my impression, quite essential to know about this retreat, about the theme of this retreat. Okay. Before we go any further, I just want to clarify something that was said earlier. It's about writing in the hall and writing during the retreat. So in general, the suggestion is, you know, just like leave writing aside. But if it's helpful for you to make sense of things, you know, to take small notes, to kind of keep a record of things, you're very welcome to write, like at a time like this, when there's a Dharma talk, you're also welcome to write. When we're describing a little bit the instructions, but a real strong encouragement not to write in here at other times, like when other people, when we are meditating in here, and also not to write in other places, right? So that kind of like supporting something there. We spoke about that earlier, what that supports, I think. So when speaking about, you know, what maybe is essential or important to know, it's also recognizing this isn't meant to be conclusive. This is just a particular way of looking at what we're exploring here, metta and emptiness. There's always much more to say and explore. Yeah, I'm going to hold myself back. And what's probably most helpful is to view this through your own intentions, right? The intentions that we shared at the outset that Tsar invited us to remember. What is it we're here for? What is it we're dedicated to? Why? What are we trying to develop? And it's always worthwhile calling that back. Yeah? But in this moment, just remembering, recollecting, what is it actually that I'm here for? What is it that I want to support? And as much as you wish, while I'm describing it, we can just, oh yeah, that's, can this work for that? Yeah, what I'm describing. Okay. I'm gonna try. I breathe like a hurricane. Not sure. Maybe above my nose? No, I still have my nose. This is what it's like being in an old couple. I can hear you breathing. Okay. Isn't that a good sign? So, the important question that I'd like to kind of bring into the field is, what are we attending to? Yeah. What is the object of our attention? Yeah. And it's such an important question for us to explore. It's a really key Dharma question, meditator's question. What am I paying attention to right now? And the question should be pointing out there are other things you could be paying attention to, right? So whatever it is you're paying attention to. And it's important because whatever we're paying attention to, that makes up our perception of the world. That makes up our experience. That makes up our life. Whatever it is we're paying attention to. And, you know, we'll go into it a little bit more in more detail, but it's like, just think of all the different things you could be paying attention to. Right, we've got five physical senses. Which one are you going to go for? Right? And you also got the thoughts, the ideas that are coming through the heart and the mind. And we can switch around them. We know we can change it. Like, it's not news for anyone. But oftentimes we don't. We just go with, you know, whatever just turns up. Like, kind of like our defaults, right? Where the attention's drawn, the loudest thing, whatever it is, most obvious thing, maybe the most painful thing. We just end up there. Some kind of habit, or even just random, right? Or we could choose. Or we could choose. And so meditation is the art of choosing where to place your attention. But that's only part of it. It's important. It's only part of it. The other part of it is, how are you bringing that attention? How are you bringing that attention? And there's an incredible range in what we can notice. Incredible. You know, the sounds that you can hear here. The sound of my breathing. You know, the sound of the air conditioner. The sound of, was that a jackal? Maybe. You know, the sound of more distant things. The sights. What we can choose to look at, what we can see, the different shades of light, colors, all of this. There's the whole tastes and aromas that we have. Yeah. Each time we're changing our experience as we kind of change our route through the thoughts and the ideas that are occurring to us. And also the feeling of being here, the touch of the body on the body, and that internal feeling. So we can also bring our attention outwardly, inwardly. You see, right? We know this. That's part of what we can play with. We can also start paying attention to really subtle things, like the feeling of being alive. What is that? You kind of, you have a sense of it, right? You have a sense of being alive, that sense of awareness. There's an awareness here, there's consciousness here. Really subtle things that we can feel into and become the object of our attention. But again, how we attend to those things, the way that we attend to those things, is possibly infinite. Right? An incredible range of what, but the way that we attend might be infinite. You know, the types of attitude or kind of preference that we come into relationship with these things. No, I don't like that, I don't like this, you know. All those different ways. We could just flip that on its head and say, no, I want this and I don't want that, you know. Change that, change the attitude. The range of emotions that we can feel about things, right? Does that make sense? You can change these things. We change anyway over time. This one's really very subtle. I won't say a lot about it, but like the preconceived ideas that we have about this thing, you can kind of start to change that. Like, what is that sound actually? You know, oh, there's something wrong with the air conditioner. You know. It's like, no, maybe it's not that. To speak kind of plainly, we could meet our experience with a sense of, you know, suspicion or aversion, or we could meet it with greediness. And that would develop a certain experience, wouldn't it, if we're in that space of suspicion. Like, that's the nearest atmosphere in which we're existing. Or we could actually meet something with real interest. What is it? When did it start? When did it go? What's it really like if I meet it this way? Or if there's normally aversion, you know, we can kind of bring in a sense of friendliness, kindness. What does that do to my experience? Now this nearest atmosphere that made up of this attitude, this relational quality, is changing. Or we could flip, you know, greediness, oh, I must get more of that, into generosity or gratitude, maybe. And the question there is that the same experience? Is that the same life if we change those things? Yeah. Does that make any sense as a question? So is it the same? Is it the same experience if we change what we're paying attention to? Is it the same experience if we stay with the same thing, but we change the attitude, change the atmosphere? Right? Now, if that's something that's true, then there's a potential here for us to kind of tap into, right? And I want to speak about three ways that we could do that. So, a less important, but I think kind of fun question to ask yourself at any time is, how did your hand get there? Do you remember putting your hands in that position? Why did I interlace my fingertips? I don't remember doing that, right? Now, as I say, it doesn't seem like a very important question. But if I ask the question, is that the most beneficial place or way to hold my fingertips? What am I doing? Am I comforting myself in some way? Did I mean to have my shoulders this high up? Maybe not. Now, is the posture of my body affecting the kind of thinking that is going on for me, the emotional quality, and those relational things that I can bring through? Yeah, it is. I think it is. For me, I would say I have certainty that it is. I might be wrong, but that's how I feel. And if that's the case, then maybe I want to change that. Is the way I'm breathing having any impact on my experience or Zohar's? And of course it is, because it's very annoying when I breathe through my nostrils into the microphone. But it's also, you know, if we start to imagine, you know, you can start to see that, you can feel that. The way that we breathe, the way that we hold our body, it reveals so much of what's going on in our heart and mind. Yeah. You see someone, a friend, yeah, and they're troubled. You immediately know, what's wrong with them? You can see it in their body. Because the body represents the kind of emotional qualities, right? It's how acting works, but it's also how a level of communication beyond words works. And there'll be times on this retreat where we'll see someone, they haven't spoken, said a word, we feel a sense of concern. Another time we might see someone and we just think, wow, they're really having a great time. You just read that through the body. But interestingly, the body also relates back towards the mind. We can shape our experience by changing how we breathe, changing how we hold the posture. Now, if that were possible, and I think it is, what does that say about the state of the heart and the mind? That it can be influenced, can be shaped, can be guided, even if we can move it the smallest degree. So it doesn't exist independently. Yeah. And that's not the only way that we can affect what's going on in the heart and the mind. We can actually purposefully just drop in intentional qualities, just check in, like, what am I thinking about? What are you thinking right now? You know, you might be thinking at this point, this is the most English words I've listened to for a really long time. And I think I passed my maximum a couple of minutes ago. Right. And sure, this guy, he's nice and he's trying to make sense, but he hasn't made sense for a while. Someone should tell him, you know, stick to your script, just get through and then we'll all be okay. You might be thinking about a long time in the past, you know, you might be thinking about the future, thinking, wow, that's a lot of days in this space. And I think I sat in the wrong place. So there's what's going on and what we're thinking about, where we're thinking, how it's going. Comparing ourselves to our past, our future, the person next to us, whoever. Yeah. And again, we have kind of the content and the context, yeah, the objects and the atmosphere here. Like the words that are flowing through, but you notice they also come with like a tone of voice. Shaka spoke very beautifully about the silence, and Sarit also spoke about, you know, wise use of speech within the precepts here. And it's really important to notice that, you know, we're kind of easing our way into the silence here. This is going to be such an important support for us on this retreat. But you're still going to have people like me coming and talking. You know, it's like, oh, it was silent. This guy is talking, other people talking at me all the time. But even more than that, this inner speech within us is going to continue. And it's going to shape our experience. So it's really important that we're alert to the content of our thinking and the tone of that thinking. And as a practice, it's really worthwhile just to say, oh, this is what's going on here. Becoming familiar with this. And I like to give my heart and mind another chance. Say, do you want to try and say that in another way? I know you're trying to help, but it did sound kind of a bit blamey. You put me down a little bit. A bit more encouragement, enthusiasm, that kind of thing. And just that lightness of relating to it in that way. Start to shift so that the tone feels more aligned to my intention, what I came here to develop, what I came here to support. So we take a moment to start guiding this towards maybe whatever it is, a sense of gratitude. Whatever else is going on, I can be thankful that I'm here and I still exist. I can be thankful that I have the time in this busy life that we lead, yeah, to settle in, to be with others, to explore our experience. And the third area that we can start to shape is, again, you know, this is where we place our attention and how we bring it there. Shaping of those intentions into our direct experience. What's most beneficial to pay attention to? Can I really feel this breath? And meet it with kindness. Can I really open to these sounds, maybe? Allow them to be there. Welcome them to be there. What a thing to do with a heart mind. With an attention, with an awareness. So the final thing I want to say is the same as the first thing that I said. And I'm just going to speak a little bit about these two words, metta and emptiness. And this is just a review because I've already spoken about them both, but just to kind of put them in a clarifying way. I think that it would be very sensible and, you know, very reasonable, approved of by the wise, to say that metta could be the goal of our practice. Could be the goal of our practice. Yeah. And it could be a way of walking that path. To make sure that there's more goodwill in the world. Does that word goodwill mean anything? Mean something to everyone? Yeah. Does anyone not know what this word goodwill means? Yeah, is. No? Everyone's happy with that. Okay. What's a good translation for goodwill? Ratzon tov. But it's not a word. Oh, it is a word. It's two words. Okay. Okay. It's true. Ratzon tov. And so what's ratzon tov opens this kind of possibility for us to develop support, to bring more goodwill, kindness, care, welcoming, including into our attention, into the atmosphere of our being. And the atmosphere that we bring towards things, the relational quality. Yeah. You know, when you and someone else, and between you is this relationship, yeah, the relational field. And that could be full with kindness. That could be the nearest thing to your heart and mind. And then we have emptiness. It's a funny word. Things are empty, but not meaningless. Actually, empty and meaningful, which is an interesting combination of words that, or a sentence that maybe doesn't make so much sense. The simplest way I think of saying this is, things are not only this way. They're not only this way. They're not fixed this way. They're not predetermined to be this way. Yeah, exactly. They can change. They can be changed. Yeah, so we can change what we pay attention to. We can change how we pay attention to it. And then our direct experience is changed. In the Dharma, it's all about these middle ways, right? So we might switch from a view where it's like, no, this is just the way it is. You either accept it or you don't. That's your two choices. Yeah. And then we swip to the other side and say, it's completely undecided. Anything could happen. Yeah. We could all be, you know, whatever it is. And then we just imagine whatever and say, yeah, anything's possible. Anything's possible. Our middle way is a little bit closer to that. It doesn't mean anything goes or anything could be, but it can't only be this way. It can't only be this way. There's some more possibilities, and there are things that we can do. We can change it. That's the most important thing to know. Oh, I can change this. Maybe only a little bit right now, but I can't change it if I change my breathing, change my attitude, lean back a little bit, change my thinking pattern. Slowly, slowly, I'm developing different ways of relating to this. If things were not empty, there would be no meditation. There'd be no point, right? Because nothing would change. You'd come here and just spend 7 days hitting your head against a wall, and then you leave and say, yes, I've determined nothing can be changed. Nothing is empty. It's all just fixed, preordained. It's all going to unfold that way. So things can change because things are made up. And that doesn't mean it's all just a fiction. It means it's not quite a fact. It means that we can influence these things. And yet, each time we have the experience of reality, it feels very real. It feels like, this is the way it is. And that's due to the nature also of perception. You know, it should feel this way, it should feel real to you. You'll notice if you listen to someone talking about this kind of stuff, you're not so familiar with it, not kind of drowned yourself in this kind of concepts before, it can start to feel a little bit uneasy if people are saying, this is just a perception of reality, it's not reality really. It could be different, it could be changed in these ways. It can feel disorienting, you know. I don't mean to be disorienting. I hope I'm not. I hope no one here is feeling that way. But when you really feel like, hang on, I'm not sure this is real, do you notice there's that feeling? It's, you almost feel a bit sick, you know, that you feel really uncertain. So I don't want you to feel like that. That's not what I'm trying to talk you into. But I think that's why we feel quite certain, this is reality. This is how it really is. I've come back to my senses. Now I see things really well. But it's all impacted by the mood. It's impacted by what we look for. It's impacted by how we relate to it. It's impacted by the level of interest we have in our experience. It's impacted by the body language. So the point here is that we play a part. We play a part in all of this, and we can shape it towards well-being. We can shape it towards goodwill. And it goes like this as a practice. We need to become familiar with what is happening in this body, heart, mind, where this attention is going. And that takes honesty, it takes humility. Yeah. Oh, it's like this right now. And then we bring mindfulness. Mindfulness means to remember something. It means to remember possibilities. Maybe I'll breathe a bit deeper. Maybe I'll encourage a sense of kindness, all those other intentions that I'm here to develop. So it starts with this getting familiar, remembering our intentions. How's it going? And where are we going? And that should be enough to get us at least a few steps into this retreat together. So that's what I wanted to share for now. And those who wish, you're welcome to hang out in this space a bit longer. We're going to take half an hour for some walking practice and then come back at 9 o'clock for the last sitting together of the day. And we're going to include some chanting in that period, which could be a really nice thing to do for some of us and a really not very nice thing to do for others of us. So pick for yourself where you sit on that. It's not a singing competition and no one needs to sing well, right? It's just making noises with our mouths for the enjoyment of all beings. So really feel invited to come along to that. If you're exhausted for numerous reasons, traveling, sickness, whatever it is, do feel free to turn in early, get some good rest, and we'll be back in here at 6:30 in the morning for silent sitting, and 7:15 there'll be some guided movement, or you can do your own movement at that time, and we'll say a bit more about that at the end of the sitting. Okay, so in case you're new to walking practice, we'll say more about it tomorrow, but basically pick a bit of a space, see what other people are doing, if that's helpful, to take some pointers, and experience yourself walking around just in the same way as we do with the breath or with the sounds in the stillness posture. Yeah. I don't know why people laugh when I talk, but they do. And I'm happy for them. I'm really happy for all of you. But yeah, just be aware of yourself. Walking, moving, feeling that experience. Feeling the night air. May it be cool and refreshing. And we'll come back in at 9 o'clock.